Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here today with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
Coach Steve, I'm really well. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm good. You know, like last night, I had an interesting sleep and I woke up with a little like kind of like ulcer thing in my mouth, right? Not really ulcer, but you know when you like kind of bite on your cheek? Have you ever done that? Yeah, yeah. And it's just like sore. So if I sound a little bit strange, it's because I'm trying to talk through a little bit of a cut in my mouth. So yes, I am human as well. And things happen to me too. But other than that, I'm feeling good, Nick. I'm excited that we're now in week 2 of this January challenge. And it's been an exciting couple of weeks as we roll through prep week, roll through week 1. And now week 2 has begun, Nick. And, you know, I think it's now the time when things become challenging, you know, like week one is exciting, you know, week 2, like, oh yeah, this is going well. But then as we like roll into that week 3, we're like, whew, this is going to be a bit of a slog over the next, you know, 10 weeks or so, right?
Definitely. The novelty starts to wear off and you realize that you're going to have to make it a habit and a routine, and maybe results don't come as quickly as what you'd like. And then you get conflicted. So there's a lot of internal struggles. But that's what we're here for.
That's right. That's right. And I think the biggest problem that we face in those first couple of weeks is that all or nothing mindset that we've spoken about, Nick, where individuals will start the challenge, you know, want to give it 110% in week 1. But then once we get to maybe week 4 or 5, gosh, that 110% is now cruising at 50%. You know, we get tired, we get lethargic, we can't maintain this high energy level. And then those individuals often don't make it to the end of the challenge. So if you feel that, you know, you need to give the challenge, you know, 110, 120, 130% of your effort, you know, we're just kind of like borrowing time, you know, 110% is borrowing from somewhere. So I'm going to invite you to think about, you know, a routine, think about longevity, think about, you know, how you can do this over the next 12 weeks. And just by grinding it out and slogging it out is a recipe ultimately for failure in the challenge.
Absolutely. It's probably better to give 80% the whole of the time than 110% for the first 2 weeks and then disappear.
That's right. And we see that same problem all amongst fitness. And, you know, we see it in the New Year's resolution. We see it when people were trying to make big changes coming up to, you know, like weddings or birthdays or other events where, you know, we want to start the gym, we want to do all the things. And then we kind of lose that passion. It goes away. That motivation goes away. And then what do we need to rely on? Well, we need to rely on a routine. Sure, discipline is nice, but, you know, if we can change our environment, have some consistency in our day, that's when this thing becomes easy, right? And, you know, Nick, you and I, we build our life around this. This is like our biggest habit. It's our biggest form of entertainment is being part of gym culture. And that's what we do every day. And it's now expressed that its way through our body, our appearance, our fitness, our health, because it's just what we do.
I know if you do something long enough, you kind of become that. It's like the saying about if you, the 5 main people you hang out with kind of shape your environment. So for us, we either hang out like at the gym or, you know, with our colleagues and ourselves, that we're very much all about this lifestyle. So that's why we've become it. We live it, we breathe it, you know, we're surrounded by it. So it's not really an option for us to not do it. I think that would be more torturous for us than getting up early and doing it.
That's right. Yeah. And I think like part of it is like part of the identity of a fitness person. Like, you know, Nick, you and I, we speak the language. Like we know how to talk fitnessy, you know, use the common term. So if you're listening to this, you're not sure what like I'm talking about with the fitness language, you know, start with things like sets and reps. And then take it on to things like, okay, what about, you know, drop sets? What about dieting and diet breaks? What about, you know, like bro culture out there? Like, oh, I'm shredding, bro. Like, do you know what this language means? And then once you kind of get in with the lingo, then you're like, hey, I'm now a fitness person. I know all the lingo of it. And it's almost a little bit it's almost a little bit culty, Nick, you know, like when you kind of dive into like the fitness space, it's almost like you've been like indoctrinated into like the fitness crew. And then like, now you speak my language. It's like, oh, hey, bro, you speak the language. I speak the language, bro. Like we're bros now, you know, like it's kind of really mingling like that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you ever want to make friends with some guy at the gym, like just, you know, if you think, oh, they look scary or anything, just go up to them and say, you are so huge. Look at your muscles. And then they will just love you forever. You'll have a friend for life. They'll be like, do you want a spot? Do you want me to help you? those people, all of that whole culture, they're the nicest bunch of people that you'll ever meet in general. So, you know, just get involved, immerse yourself, and it's a lot of fun. And also, I'll just say, like, this is a generalization, but a lot of people that are at the gym sort of maybe didn't love hanging out at school, maybe weren't the most social people or whatever, and they found their people in the gym. You know, like, I was not super popular at school. I was a bit nerdy, but at the gym, I'm like, cool, because I've been there for long enough.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I'm one of the old schools.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of, you can find your niche, can't you?
You can. And, you know, I think that goes for both like guys and girls, you know, like I think going up to someone and, you know, complimenting them on like their figure is always a great little boost. Like for me in the gym, everyone's muscles. I'm like, hey, muscles, how you doing, muscles? It's just what we do. And like common questions I'd ask someone is like, oh, hey, muscles, where are you training today? And they'll say something like, oh, you know, back and buys. I'm like, oh, awesome. Like have a good session, you know, that type of thing. So I think like that's always like a nice way to kind of interact with people and, you know, be part of like the fitness culture. And I think that's like one of the first steps where maybe we come from a very isolating position. Maybe that's the reason why we're not happy with our body composition. We're making this change, trying to step into like, you know, a fitness culture of some sort. And, you know, part of that is to kind of break out of that really isolating space and moving into lots of like an interconnected space. And you may find that, you know, just by interacting with people, you know, you feel like a higher mood, a higher motivation. You're like, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to smash it out. So, you know, fitness culture is quite important, and it kind of starts with that identity. It starts with like the language, but then ultimately it's changing our environment, Nick, you know, making it so that it's easy for us to do this fitness thing that we love.
Definitely. And I just had an idea. If you think, oh, I couldn't do that at the gym yet, then practice on the Facebook group, you know, make a post, practice, and just sort of wet your feet there, because everyone's very supportive and it's like a giant online gym. And once you get confident there and you get people going, wow, that looks awesome, bro. Well, those leggings are great. Are they
bro? I feel like whenever we're talking about like fitness things, like I just like need to put bro in there, bro. For some reason. Like, bro, all right, bro. Like, I think I grew up in like gym culture of bro. You know, it's like whenever I'm talking guy or girl, I'm like, bro. You know? But yeah, not like bro, but like it needs to be on that accent. Bro.
The best is one day each and every one of you people, like, the women, the best thing is when some guy comes up and goes, can I work in with you when you're deadlifting? And it's like, yeah, you know, like we can share. And it's like, that's so cool, because even if it's only their warm-up or whatever, you know, it's just you feel like, you know, you feel quite empowered by that. I love that sort of stuff. And it really, it doesn't matter where you come from in life, you know, a great leveler is that sort of strength and you're all working together to do something. So it's pretty cool.
I think so. Especially when they throw in the bro at the end, you know.
Oh, totally.
It's like, hey, can I work in with a deadlift, bro? You're like, all right, yeah, man. Party time. Yep. Let's do this. Yeah.
And then you can share talk with people, even though I don't know in COVID if that's if you're meant to, but you know, you can share talk.
Yeah.
You can all that sort of stuff. It's just awesome.
Yeah, so good. Well, look, Nick. Yes, now that we're in week two, it's a great time to kind of like audit your approach to the challenge. And ultimately what we want right now is to see some consistency, right? So we're trying to see some adherence to both your nutrition workbook or your dieting strategy, whatever it is, and then some adherence to your training strategy. Maybe you're following our training program, maybe you're designing your own, that's cool. But we want to see some consistency, because no matter what we're doing, even if you're on the absolute best program in the world or the worst program in the world, it doesn't matter if you don't follow it. So we do need to see some consistency and following it. So that might mean that you need to modify your program that it is right now so that it works. Like, let's say, you know, most of our programs are training 4 or 5 days a week. And if that is too much, you know, you live a very busy life, you've got a full schedule and you can't fit that time in. Okay, well, is there a way you can modify that to train 3 days a week so you're still consistent with it, even though it's slightly less? That's cool. That's fine. Or on the nutrition side of things, maybe the nutrition workbook is suggesting that you have, you know, X amount of calories, those calories are really low, you're really hungry. Okay, is there something you can do to modify that so that it's more filling foods? Or do you need to increase your calories because the calorie suggestion is just too low? You can't handle that. And sure, you won't lose as much body weight, but you have two options. Either you try to lose a significant amount of weight and then fail in week 4, or you try to lose a low to moderate amount of weight, but then you're successful over the next 12 weeks and then 12 months. So thinking about that consistency approach, and what could you do now to make it easier for you?
Definitely. Although, you know what? I haven't heard a lot of people yet say that they're super hungry. I think it's because, you know, there's so much volume food on there. You know, you can definitely make it work for yourself. And also, yeah, because calories haven't dropped yet, peeps. You know, we're still doing well. So have a drink of water as well.
And maybe a cup of tea.
I'm going to be a tough chick today. Just say, you know, just make sure that you've had your water and a big, deep breath. And you'll be okay.
That's so good. Now, Nick, we are getting lots of questions on the places like our forum. We're getting lots of questions on places like our Facebook social hub, and then even on places like Instagram. So if you do have a question about your program, if you are one that you related with what I was saying before about, oh, maybe I should change my training program and reduce the days, or change my nutrition workbook to make it a little bit easier for me. If you relate to that and you're not sure where to start, I am going to suggest you reach out to us on the forum. Coach Nick and I are basically living there at the moment, answering lots of questions about the nutrition workbook, about training plans, and then also a whole host of other training and nutrition related questions. So please head on over to the forum to engage with us. You can find links to the forum where you download your programs. You can find links on the program itself where to find the forum. And then on the Challenge website, of course, is where the forum is. We do get lots of questions come through on our social hub, which is on Facebook. Again, you know, that's more of a place for social activities, you know, engaging with our community and, you know, being supportive of one another, finding motivation, all these good things. And Coach Nick and I may not see your question pop up. And sure, you may be able to find an answer from other people within our communities, and that answer can be correct. And it can also be slightly misleading. So I will invite you to reach out to us on the forum, okay?
Yeah, definitely, especially when it's about things like data and things, because, you know, that can send you down a rabbit hole incorrect. I mean, if it's just an opinion on the best way to cook chicken, then that's fine. Like, it's probably better to ask somebody who loves to cook chicken in a good way. But just things like different things about possibly body weight or other stuff like that, or training stuff, just ask us if you can.
No, good. One feature on the nutrition workbook, which may not have become evident yet, is the adaption that occurs over weeks 5 to 8 and 9 to 12. Okay. So within training and within dieting, we start with an energy prescription, and we work out energy prescription via a formula. And the formula is usually based around metrics such as body weight, your height and your physical activity level, and also a few other kind of questions. And you've seen these questions on your nutrition workbook at the front page. You put in things such as your height, your weight, your age, your gender, your physical activity level, and then your goal. And then we can predict an energy expenditure, which would be maintenance calories. And then depending on your goal, we can scale that so that you're in an energy deficit or energy surplus to move you towards your goal. Okay. Now, as we lose weight, you know, at a rate of 0.5 to 1% per week, that's the kind of like the ideal window of weight loss. As we lose weight, you might start asking questions of, oh, well, okay, I was 100 kilos. Now I'm 95 kilos. Should I update my weight on the nutrition workbook so that it becomes more accurate. Okay. And we've kind of built this into the template itself. So as you input information into the daily check-in, which we recommend that you use, which is a daily check-in. So every day we're logging into our workbook on the spreadsheet and inputting some information such as your body weight changes, your daily step count, and then other qualitative metrics. So, you know, how well did you sleep? How recovered do you feel? How hydrated do you feel? How stressed do you feel? So, you know, some self, rated metrics, and then other bits of information such as your daily adherence and your measurements and all these nice bits of pieces, all on the daily check-in tool on the nutrition workbook. As you input information into that tool, your program will slowly update, specifically in weeks 5 to 8, and then in 9 to 12, and then in the recovery diet after the challenge. So if you haven't already, I'm going to highly recommend that you input information specifically your body weight changes, because we know your body weight goes up and down every single day. Heck, every hour your body weight goes up and down. And we want some collection of information so we can average it out, get a good weekly average of your body weight changes. And then your step count as well. So we're trying to get a good average of what your average step count is in those phases. And then that's going to prescribe a different calorie intake for weeks 5 to 8, 9 to 12. So if you're sitting there looking at your nutrition workbook, scratching your head going, well, in weeks 5 to 8, it's this many calories. And with weeks 9 to 12, it's this many calories. That may change as you input information into your nutrition workbook. So please fill out information on your daily check-in. Don't feel the need that you need to update your program, you know, every week as your body weight changes. Just input into daily check-in and the program will do the rest for you.
That's right, because people, I think there's a misconception that you need to change everything all the time and go lower and lower. But if you're losing on the calories that you're on, you stay there. Why would you change them? It's only when, you know, if you want to be a little bit more aggressive or if it's stalled, that's why you would make them lower, you know, and that's why we don't start with the lowest. You know, we know things, don't we?
Some things, Nick. A lot of things we don't know.
Only we know. We know just about this, and that's what everyone wants to know about. So that's why we come in handy right now.
But you're right. Yeah. You know, if you have a calorie intake of, let's call it X, doesn't matter what the number is. Heck, you don't even need to know what the number is. If you have that calorie intake and you're consistent with that calorie intake and you're losing weight with that calorie intake, no point changing it.
No.
Especially if we're hitting that nice target of, let's say, 0.5 to 1% of your body weight per week. Great. State it at what it is. It could be 1,000, it could be 2,000, it could be 3,000, or it could just be X. You don't know, but you're consistently eating the same foods, same weights every single day. Perfect. Keep going. It's when we reach a point where we're not losing at that rate. So maybe you're losing at, you know, 0.1% per week or nothing per week. That's when we go, okay. Two options. Either we can further decrease the calories or we can increase our step count. They're the two paths that we can take to continue to see weight loss. As long as we're consistently hitting, resistance training to maintain muscle mass, great. It doesn't matter if we want to increase our step count or decrease our calories so that we can continue to see weight loss, especially if your goal is fat loss. If it's muscle gain, we're going the opposite way, where we're trying to gain 0.5 to 1% of our body weight per month. So we don't want to be gaining 1% body weight every week, or we'll kind of blow out quite quickly. So we want to be gaining about 0.5 to 1% of our body weight per month. And if we're not gaining at that rate, okay, we can either choose to increase our food intake or slightly decrease our step count. But, you know, we're choosing not really to decrease our step count because we don't want to just be sedentary all day. So if you are stepping like 30,000 steps a day, maybe you want to pull it back a little bit or just simply eat more, which is normally a fun thing for individuals to do, is to find ways to consume more food, especially if they're trying to get as big as they can, which isn't for everybody, but I can understand that it is for some individuals.
Huge as possible, huge. So what happens to me when my calories go up is I just tend to move a lot more. So it's a funny thing because I want to, because I feel happier and so I'll increase all my different things. So that's just a natural byproduct for me. Some individuals are like that. I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, that's just what they do as a response, just naturally. They just increase their activity. So then it's like, you just got to increase your food.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we talk a bit about adaption, how when you decrease your calories, your body will adapt and maybe that will result in less physical activity. So your overall energy expenditure decreases. It happens in the opposite way as well, where if you increase your calories, some individuals like you, Nick, will increase their physical activity just by doing more steps, maybe more active, maybe, you know, bigger effort in the gym. And their energy expenditure will increase as their food intake increases. So to get that, so as they think that they're in an energy surplus, really they kind of get into a bit of maintenance. So they need to kind of continue going up. So it's a tricky thing what we're trying to do here, both in weight loss and weight gain. But it's all about like, you know, slow incremental steps to stay ahead of our body's, you know, normal response of homeostasis, where we're trying to stay equal. Absolutely. Yeah.
And like, especially because a lot of people have very active jobs as well. So if you're trying to put on muscle, just say you're a tradie, you've got to eat a lot of food because you're walking around a lot and doing a lot of physical activity as well, let alone the gym as well. So you're going to have to increase those calories, make sure that you're on top of that if you want to gain muscle.
Yeah, and I do think like muscle gaining is a whole beast on its own. You know, like we often join the challenge because we're trying to lose weight. I understand there are individuals out there who are trying to gain weight, and gosh, that's its own journey and its own beast. And it's not for the faint-hearted. So if you think that you know, gaining weight would be an easy endeavor, you know, give it a go. Maybe it would be better than Coach Nick and I in our endeavors to build size and muscle. But it is definitely its own challenge.
Yeah, definitely. You've got to be really strategic. And I think as we progress in the challenge, you know, and we get more and more into all this stuff with muscle gain and muscle building, I think more and more people will give it a go. So it's going to be fun. All the chicken will sell out everywhere.
If it's not sold out already with old mate COVID. True. All right, Nick, look, let's move on to our non-scale victories for the week. Hashtag NSVs. Nick, have you found any this week?
Yes, I found some really good ones. So the first one off the block is Leslie Meadows. Hello, Leslie. How are you? I hope you're very well. Now, Leslie says, day 4, steps check, nutrition check, workout check. Had my weekly PT tonight, which makes getting in at least one workout per week really easy. It's also been nice doing this challenge with my husband. Our conversations have shifted to things like how many calories are in this meal, or I'm putting in an order for Nutrition Warehouse. Do you need anything? It's quite funny, really. I think it will really help as the going gets tough in later weeks. So isn't that just basically talking about everything that we've just chatted about getting one session in, you know, making sure that's covered at least, and then finding an accountability buddy, which is husband, and then thinking already about when it gets tough. So that's ticking all the boxes. Well done, Leslie.
I love that. And I, you know, speaking about the language idea before, like, you know, the conversation changed maybe in Leslie's household from, you know, what pizza do you want tonight? Or, you know, do you want to go and check out this movie or something? And now it's changing to how many calories are in this meal? Or do you want anything from Nutrition Warehouse? So I like that. It starts with the language change, the conversation change. And now, you know, Leslie and her partner are probably going to be two very different people at the end of this challenge.
Yes, a nice Valentine's Day tub of protein. Be funny. All right, so the next one that I've got is our mate Alfleda Ang. So she's been around forever. Hello, shout out, legend. So what she is saying is in May 2020, that was my first Maxine's challenge during lockdown, home gym with a set of dumbbells, kettlebells, resistance bands with my training buddy Maria Cuscieri. Before Maxine's, I did nothing but cardio in the gym. So that's a lot of people. Lockdown came and we discovered Maxine's challenge, strength training since then. Unfortunately, my poor old knees didn't agree, but that didn't stop me from training as I modified most of the exercises. Surgery followed in 2021. Now at 67 years old, I'm ready to smash some more goals. So how exciting. That's so good. Welcome back. And yeah, those two have done a lot of good stuff together. So I think that's fantastic. Don't let age stop you. You know, a home setup was good. They're back at the gym. I love it.
No, so good. So good. I remember watching Maria and Elf Leader's videos through lockdown, and I think they were in New South Wales. And while Melbourne was in and out of perpetual lockdown, I remember seeing their Tutu Tuesdays running around the gym. So it was always exciting to see them having a great time. So keep it up, Elf Leader. And, you know, age is just a number, right? And strength training, it really is the fountain of youth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, next one, Jody Lee Jackson. So Jody's our new number one fan. So she'll love this little bit of a shout out because she's loving the podcast. So imagine when she hears her own name in it. Oh, it's like the Matrix or something. Very exciting. So Jody, she says, my challenge to myself next week is to improve on my personal best today. I've been walking during my lunch break every day so far. I know this will make a difference in 12 weeks' time. That's right, future thinking, I like it. I feel good this challenge. My head is in the game. My mindset is strong and I have a goal. I'm reflecting on previous challenges and learning from what hasn't worked and why. Know my body's limits. Listen to my body. Listen to the advice from Steve and Nicoletta. Oh, I should give this to my kids. Listen to the advice from previous champions. I've pushed myself more than ever this week. I know it's only day four and I'm going to have days to try and dampen my spirit. I'm ready this time. Note to self, drink more. So that's really cute. I love it. Well done, Jody.
No, so good. So good, Jody. Yeah, I'm excited to see what you can do over the next 12 weeks. I have a few non-scale victories here. The first one is Phil Jackson's, maybe related to...
They are. They're husband and wife. So how exciting is their little podcast today?
That's it. That's it. So Phil here. Phil. He writes, overview so far. I usually start the challenge with great excitement and feeling positive. Beginning the first challenge off 2022, the first one was January 2021, I feel different. I feel focused, almost blinkered in my determination to nail every aspect of the challenge. I have either nailed the nutrition or the exercise, but never both. I believe in this challenge, I'm going to ensure that I do it to the letter. So on day four, week one, and all well, I have realized how much I am missing eating healthy and going to the gym. So I like this one for Phil because, you know, he really highlights that, okay, maybe in the past he's just really tried, you know, nailing the challenge side of things, you know, the training side of things, or nailing the nutrition side of things. And in this challenge, going to nail both. So I'm excited to see what both Phil and Jody can achieve over the next 12 weeks. And hopefully they are really supportive of each other. And, you know, hopefully there's a little bit of competition between the two of them. You know, maybe both of them get into the top 50, or maybe in the top 10, or even take out the grand champion. So I'm excited to see what the Jacksons can do.
Mm-hmm. Go the Jacksons.
The next one here is Karen Elizabeth Porter. So Karen's done a few challenges with us, and she writes in her journal, and she writes, crushing my training and eating in sync. In sync, I love it. I can feel myself getting fitter already. I know by next week I'll be crushing the 5-set circuits. At the moment, I'm listening to my body and getting through 3 sets. Rock on, it's happening. Love it, Karen. Yeah,
rock on, Karen.
Rock on, Karen. I love that you're scaling the program to your current abilities, maybe doing 3 sets of the circuits. And then next week, you know, you're really gunning for the 5-set circuit. So awesome, Karen. Keep it up.
Very good.
And the last one here goes to David Clark. David writes, got an awesome pump in the HIIT session today. Felt like I wanted to hit a few more rotations. Awesome. I can already feel my body adapting back into gym life and the strength that comes with it. Grip strength in my left hand is a little lacking, but I'm sure it will come in time. Briefly spoke to Mark today, a fellow challenge participant and absolute beast. Go Mark. Didn't want to disturb his workout too much, but he said that I'll definitely hit my goals if I keep at it. More motivation. Yay. I love that. I love that, David. I love that you've identified another challenger in Mark and you're going to say hi. And, you know, he's an absolute beast. So awesome to both David and to Mark. And, you know, I think it's a, you know, seeing another challenger out in the wild is a little bit of an exciting time. You know, maybe they were rocking a Max or Maxine top, and or maybe you see the challenge program, maybe they're printed off, and you're like, oh, you're doing the challenge, and then you made a new best friend. So you know, look out for that. I think that's really cool, and I'm sure that anybody out there who is doing the challenge would welcome another challenger coming saying hi.
That's right. If anyone sees me out in the wild, come and say hi as well, for sure.
I have bumped into challenges out in the wild. Back when I was like finishing off my studies at uni, I'd be on the train going to the city, going to uni, and I'd see a challenger on the train. And you know, it's weird when I don't know anything about the other person and they know everything about me, right? And I feel like there's like a mixed match. And I apologize to anyone out there if I don't know your name or don't know who you are, and you may know who I am, but I'm always welcoming anyone coming and saying hi. So that's always good.
Yeah, me too. Come and say hi. And then we'll get on with our workout.
No, look, big congratulations to all of our non-scale victory participants this week. If you're noticing a non-scale victory, make a post about it. You can post it on places like your Instagram, your Facebook, on our Facebook social hub, and then also on the journals as well, where Coach Nick and I find most of our non-scale victory participants.
Definitely.
Now, Nick, let's move on to our Coach's Corner, where we offer our tip for the week. So, Nick, what advice do you have for us?
Well, it's just funny because our whole podcast has nearly pretty much had the theme that I'm talking about, which is dealing with gym anxiety. It happens to be that we've gone through quite a few different pointers already organically that kind of lead to some solutions for if you're feeling gym anxiety. So I actually read a post on the Facebook group that kind of prompted me to revisit this. So the post was went along the lines of this. Somebody said, my food has been on point, but I just bailed at the gym. Why? After 4 years of weight training with bodybuilders, I got halfway through the boot camp with an unfamiliar exercise and I lost it. I tried to do a lateral lunge and stumbled. I saw a coach look at me and got super self-conscious. I was so embarrassed, I almost cried. My anxiety was so bad that I bailed. So I just wanted to explore, why do we feel intimidated? What is it? How can we kind of lessen that feeling? So if I was going to give this person some advice, which would apply to anybody, I would say that anytime anything feels unfamiliar, we have that anxiety. So whether it's, if you're, you know, how you were talking before about jumping on the train, if it's a new train route, you might be sort of anxious until you've done it once or twice. You might go, oh, I wonder what time it gets there. I mean, I wonder, you know, where I could sit on this train. I wonder if I need to go to the door and, you know, that kind of a thing. So it's not unusual to feel a bit scared about certain things when you first start off. So I wouldn't base it, I wouldn't sort of take it personally that you've done anything wrong. Also, anytime you're doing any type of a lungy exercise, I can guarantee it doesn't matter how experienced you are, the first couple of times you do it, you do have to find your balance. You will kind of stumble a little bit. And probably if anyone's looking over at you, mostly probably that person's quite caring and they might go, oh, I hope they don't fall over, or maybe I should go grab that dumbbell or anything like that. As a former, you know, coach in a gym, that would be the only reason why I'd look over at anybody to say anything. So people aren't as judgy as we think that they are. But so what would I do? I would make myself familiar with the exercises prior. So that's a really good way to make sure you're not feeling scared or intimidated because you've already gone through it. So have a look at the videos that we provide and make yourself familiar with the exercises prior. Then there's just no way that you're going to feel like you don't know what's going on, because usually if you're just looking at it and you're like, oh, I've got to do this, got to do that, the circuits are quite rushed as well, because they're supposed to be for time. So you probably have that feeling of needing to hurry up. The other thing I would do is if it's your first time in the gym, sign up for one or two sessions with a trainer. It's actually really worth the investment because they'll take you through your program, but they'll also take you through all the different machines, because there are so many different machines in different gyms and they work in different ways that all of us, even, you know, myself who's in gyms a lot, if I'm going to a new machine, I have to fiddle around with the seat. I'll have to check that it's okay, that it's at the right height. I might not know which lever to pull. That's very, very normal. explore the layout of the gym and try the machines prior as well, because sometimes circuits and things or supersets or giant sets require that you do things that are together that might not actually fit together in your gym. So it feels like you're kind of hogging it because you have to go across the gym. So you might have to rethink the way that your program is designed if you feel a bit scared at first, especially if it's in peak hour. And train the first time without distractions. So try not to use your phone as a crutch, because I think that you've just got to rip the Band-Aid off. You don't want to be staring down at your phone. You want to own your space. I think owning your space is really important. And once you feel that you're part of it and you're aware of your surroundings, because if you've got all your music in, which is great after, you can layer that up, but you want to realize that people aren't talking about you. You can eavesdrop on their conversations. They're talking about themselves. So as soon as you start to realize that, it's better for you. Use the mirror. It's there to check your form, and you'll realize that you're probably not as clumsy as you think you are. And yeah, realize that people are really only worried about themselves. So they're my little tips. But I think that the best tip that we came up with was really just engage with the fellow people at the gym, because that's a really good way to not feel intimidated and actually be excited about going.
I like it. And I do think that there are some big challenges with anxiety in the gym. And I think part of it is due to the nature of training, and the nature of training is trying to make things difficult, trying to find our weaknesses and building upon that. And if you are in the gym and you were an expert at everything, you know, you're in the wrong gym. You're not training for anything. So I think part of the process of training is to understand that there are exercises that we're probably not good at. Like, you know, Nick, you and I'm sure there are some exercises that if someone put us in those positions, you know, we're weak, we're stumbling, we haven't got there. But that's like the point of training, where we're trying to find those exercises or find variations of those exercises that are difficult, becoming stronger in them. So if you're feeling a little bit anxious and overwhelmed in the gym, I think that's kind of part of it. Part of it is to kind of have that humbling idea of, hey, I'm not good at this, and that's okay. That's the point of it. I'm not good at it because I'm going to get better at it. And I understand if our first knee-jerk reaction is, it's overwhelming, it's too much, I'm out of here. But I am going to invite you to, you know, be consistent in it and embrace it, you know, be part of it, going, hey, I suck at this. And there's lots of times I've tried new exercises or gone to, you know, like CrossFit classes and stuff and gone, man, I suck at this. And I suck at it. And that's a good thing, because now I know that I suck at it. So I'm going to work on it and get better at it. So if you realize that you maybe suck at an exercise or aren't good at something, awesome. You found something that you work towards, and how good is it going to be in, you know, just a few weeks' time when you nail it and you go, yeah, look at that progression. This is awesome. I've really improved myself.
That's right. And it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay. You don't have to be good at everything. I used the Stairmaster for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and you should have seen everyone, like not everyone, there were like two or three people who were going, oh, you're supposed to be good at all this stuff. And I'm like, oh man, I just embraced it and said, you should see me. Like, this is hysterical. But I said, because I don't use it very much, I'm going to get a lot of yield from this. And then it didn't take me long. And then now I'm really good at it. I don't even use my hands on it. So I just embraced it. And you can have a laugh at yourself as well, because that's what I do. If you know, I just go, you know, you can't be good at everything, can you? So, you know, it's okay. You just got to chill out, I think, sometimes too, because it's supposed to be fun.
That's right. That's right. Now, Nick, bouncing off of this idea of progression, I want to talk about some tips around progress and starting with a story. So I've always sucked at pull-ups. Mm-hmm. Always sucked at pull-ups and chin-ups. I think part of it was I was always a heavier person growing up. The idea of jumping on a bar and trying to pull yourself up, nah, no dice. But I always enjoyed training my back and always found love in things like the lat pull down and stuff. So because I suck at chin-ups, what do you think I build most of my programs around? It's chin-ups. So I know that I've always sucked at them. So I always work on them, and over time I get better at them. And, you know, now I could comfortably bump out, you know, 10 to 20 pull-ups or so, but I still think I suck at them. So, you know, I keep working on them, and that's a big part of it, working on them. Now, I was doing some chin-ups in my home garage just the other day, and I'm, you know, rep after rep, okay, happy days. But then I started to reflect as I was doing the exercise, Because on paper, you know, the week prior, I had done 13 reps. So this week I needed to do 14. I needed to progress. So in the drive for progression, what I was doing was I started to use a shorter range of motion. So instead of getting the bar all the way to, let's like getting myself up, so my chest is almost at the bar, you know, I was maybe stopping at my chin. So at rep six, I was stopping at my chin. I was like, okay, I'm going to get to 14. And then instead of lowering myself down and, you know, getting myself back to the starting position where my arms are straight, I was cutting the rep short there, where I was stopping where my arms were at a slight bend, and I was bouncing off of some of my shoulder soft tissue, right? Mm-hmm. And then I was kind of like rushing through it. So yeah, I got to 14 reps, but they weren't of the same quality as the 13 reps I did last week, because I found ways to make the movement easier so that I can get more reps out, but I wasn't actually getting good progression. Okay. So what did I do? Well, my next set, I scaled it back, thought about and reflected on my technique, and was there ways that I was making it easier for myself? I then tried to make it harder for myself and got a better stimulus out of it. You know, my back was pumpy, my biceps were pumpy, you know, my grip was really challenged through the motion. So that was a better stimulus for me. So what I want to tell you today, my big tip, is to think about this concept that I call pseudo progression or fake progression. And for me, my sense of progression was to do more reps. So going from 13 reps last week to now doing 14 reps on a chin up that I was doing. But to do that, to force the progression, I was forcing it, I experienced fake progression because I was cheating myself. So some examples of how you may be cheating your exercise without knowing, because we don't know, because, you know, even me, I was fixated on doing 14 reps. But to get there, I was cheating myself and I didn't notice it until after the fact. Okay. So the first one is using momentum. And that's a common one you see in the gym. So you may see the bro in the corner, they've got like the 30 kilo fixed barbell and they're trying to do bicep curls, but they're, you know, really swinging the weight, they're using the momentum. So you kind of go, well, you're just using that momentum as a clutch to get progression. Sure, you may be able to do more reps, but it's a lower stimulus. You're not really getting any good you know, stimulus on the muscle. So think about it, reflect. Are you using momentum, and are you in a sense thinking about progression and progressing via using momentum? Okay, so that's the first one. The next one is bouncing off of soft tissue. What do I mean by this? An example is, let's say a squat. Let's say you've got some really great squat mobility like Coach Nick. You're able to lower yourself down. And then as you lower yourself down, you bounce off of you know, your ankles, your knees and your hips, and you know, your thigh bounces off of your calf, and then you're able to bounce through it. So you're bouncing off the soft tissue structures, using a bit of that momentum. And you see that in, let's say, some individuals who use machines, where they will bounce off the machine so they can continue doing reps. Or maybe like a deadlift, you know, a deadlift in the name is a dead lift. You're lifting it from a dead weight. But some individuals would use like a tap and go, where they bounce the deadlift off the ground. So, you know, we're utilizing that momentum, utilizing the bounce, and sometimes that's bouncing off of soft tissue. So that's an easy way to make the movement easier to get more reps in, but it's also taking away from some of the stimulus. You're not really progressing. Mm-hmm. The next one is using less range of motion. So I experienced this when I was doing my chin-ups, where I wasn't going through the full range of motion. I was cutting my range of motion short. So sure, I was able to do more reps. Heck, I could have done 20, 30 reps, but I was better off using a full range of motion where my arm becomes straight, and then getting my chest all the way to the bar so that I can do a uniform rep with a uniform range of motion rather than cutting it short. Okay. Mm-hmm. Next one here is altered tempo. So, you know, we've spoken about tempo just a few podcasts ago. Nick gave us a really detailed explanation on tempo. But maybe in one particular week, you know, your nice and slow controlled descent, and then a nice powerful, you know, press or push in motion. But then as you try to progress, what you might do is start to reduce that eccentric phase, or that lowering phase. You're kind of rushing it, you know? So instead of doing like a bench press where you're nice controlled, lowering the bar down to your chest and nice powerful press, you know, you're quickly lowering the barbell down to your chest, bouncing off your chest and pressing through, you're altering the tempo, making it easier for yourself. And then you think you're progressing, but you're not really progressing, all right? And then finally is altered rest times. So, you know, you may find that you're able to do 10 reps of a squat, nice and easy. You know, maybe you've got 60 kilos in the bar, 10 reps, happy days. But then in week one, you rest for, let's say, 2 minutes. And then the week after, you try to do 11 reps. Great, you get it done. But then you now rest for 5 minutes. You know, you really altered your rest time. And this also happens in the opposite direction, where you try to progress by having less rest. So you might have like 30 seconds rest in between because, you know, old school bro, you got to do all the things really quickly. So you reduce the rest. But then what that means is that you maybe reduce the range of motion, use momentum, and then reduce the weight so that you can continue to see progress in that sense. So just some ideas to reflect on with your own lifting. Primarily, the principle around training is that idea of progressive overload. We're trying to do more over time. We're trying to add more reps, add more sets, add more weight. We're trying to do more for our body so that we can continue to see growth. But sometimes we push the progression too quickly and we start shortchanging ourselves by using things like momentum or less range of motion or altered tempo. So just reflect on that. And, you know, maybe that is you film yourself and watch your technique, watch how you're lifting, what's your approach to lifting. Can you improve on that? Because I know that we can all improve on it. And, you know, I know that Nick and I do it a lot where we film ourselves, we watch, we reflect and go, okay, am I giving myself the best stimulus possible or am I just shortchanging myself?
Definitely. I love it. And oh, the altered rest has made all the difference to me because there was a time when I was doing all the powerlifting stuff where I would over rest in between. I would have 5 minutes and it would like to 10 minutes. It was ridiculous. And then the opposite where I've even just cut it short by 30 seconds and then I've taken the time to actually have that extra 30 seconds rest. And it makes all the difference when you're going back in to do those squats again or deadlifts or whatever it is that you're doing. So, so true. It makes such a difference.
The old rep range stuff. And, you know, if you're wondering like how long you should rest for, well, I'd recommend anywhere between like 1 to 3 minutes, of course, depending on what you're doing. If you are a powerlifter and you're, you know, really trying to lift some heavy ass weight, yeah, sure. You might need to bring out the old camping chair and rest for, you know, 5 to 10 minutes. Sure. Maybe. But for most of us with body composition goals, resting for 1 to 3 minutes is a good space to rest in and think about a quick little checklist, you know. Think about the target muscle you're aiming for. Is that ready to go? Think about synergous muscles, muscles that work together with that target muscle. Are they ready to go? Cardiovascular wise, are you ready to go? You know, are you still short of breath or are you ready to go? And then mentally, are you mentally, you know, got that fire in your eyes ready to do another set? So if you can tick off those four things, great, you've had enough rest and then away you go into your next set.
Yeah, actually that's a really good point before we move on. A lot of our challenges in the demographic of say like 40 plus women, cardio fit to the heavens. So just because your cardiovascular system has recovered from a lift doesn't mean the rest of you has. So take that rest time because I can sometimes go, oh, I'm fine because I'm not panting anymore, but then my actual muscles are still very fatigued. So something to take note of because we've got a lot of cardio beasts and they might be faux recovery.
Love it. Love it. Nick, let's answer a few questions here from our audience. So the first question here, can I eat what I want as long as I stick to the daily macro targets? I use an app to track everything I eat and I'm wondering, will it make any difference if my diet is different to what's on the nutrition workbook? But my macros and daily calories are met. Any advice appreciated? Thanks. So Nick, what advice would you give this person?
I'd love to give this person some advice. So if it fits your macros is a thing. So, you know, a macro is a macro, but the problem with it is that if you start to be too cheeky with it and you go, okay, that means I'm going to have a tub of Halo Top a tub of a specific type of ice cream, which I've already mentioned the brand, but you know, just say it's 360 calories, but then, you know, say a piece of salmon and some sweet potato is the same. I think ultimately the bang for buck for what it does for you long-term is going to be found in the whole food. So that's where it's sort of, it's not necessarily an excuse to be able to fit everything in. I think that it also, you do need to start to create habits and consistency if you want to see results with body composition. So that's when we're getting to the pointier end where we want consistency. If we're trying to get lean, we don't want to introduce too many variables, because also that can lead to breaking of habits, good habits such as sticking to certain meals and meal prep. Because I think sometimes people think, as long as I'm hitting those macros, I don't then have to prepare. But part of creating good habits and consistency and mentally shifting into meal prep is actually adhering to something where you actually have to cook fresh food and prepare it and create a ritual around that. And there's no real getting around that if you want to get to that next level body composition. I know a lot of coaches actually say to get to that final pointy end, they take away the if it fits your macros, because certain variables that you don't need are, like if just say you're somebody that gets quote unquote bloated, how would we even know where to start if you're not just eating the whole foods that are on the template? Plus, can I just also say, the template has such a variety of foods. It's just that it's a variety of plain whole foods. So it might not seem the same as, chips and chocolate and things like that. So you certainly can fit anything you want in, and you can do it however you want. And if you understand about macros, then you're already, past a newbie level. But I just think that, changing meals too much is going to introduce too many variables for even, say, us as coaches to be able to then advise you about what we could change if you're not seeing any results. So that's my answer.
I like it. Yeah. The only thing I would say is that, that if it fits your macros or maybe flexible dieting approach can be suitable for some individuals. Sure. If you are living maybe the maintenance lifestyle, you don't have goals to get into like that exotically lean body fat percentage. Sure. No problems with that. And for the majority of our challengers who are, maybe like that general population trying to lose a little bit of weight. Sure. Fitting within our calorie intake is a perfect place to start. And, you could eat almost anything you want as long as it's within that calorie intake. Sure. However, if you are like Coach Nick, you're in that pointy end, you're trying to win the max or the max lean challenge, you're trying to get, sub 10% body fat for guys or, sub 20% body fat for girls, if that's what you're aspiring to be, that's when we do kind of need to have that real traditional bodybuilding diet. We need to be choosing foods that are high in micronutrients. So instead of having that tub of ice cream, you probably want to be having the same calories from, let's say fruits and vegetables and, good sources of protein. Yeah, because they're going to have more micronutrients. They're going to, have more of those vitamins and minerals to fuel your body. Nick, you made a really great point around consistency, because, nutrition is, we can't be super accurate with nutrition. Heck, like labels can be off by up to 10%, and they're, allowed to do that. Same with like the foods that we're eating, like the nutrition in, let's say, fruits and vegetables are different depending on how you cook them, are different to, how ripe they are if they're in season. They're all got different nutritional values in it. So the best way that we can rule out all these extra variables is to have some consistency where we have the same types of foods at around the same times, cooked a similar way. Then we can say, okay, I think my calories are 2000 calories, but, let's call it X, because it's probably better to be less consistent, say, all right, I'm having X amount of calories because I'm having this food. Me eating this food and having X calories, is it losing weight? Yes. Is it losing weight? No. If it's not losing weight, okay, maybe I do X minus 100 calories, and that could be by taking one food out. So I do think that having similar meals cooked a similar way around similar time, having that consistency, that routine is super powerful than trying to follow the if it fits your macros approach, even though that it can be successful for some individuals. And ultimately that's what it is on paper, if it fits your macros. However, in practice, it's probably best to have a consistent meal intake.
Yeah, that's right. And so, just bottom line is you can. So I don't want anyone to say that, oh, Coach Nick said that you can't. You can. It's just, I think I've done that before. I've done it. And I've just come full circle to the idea now that in my many years, it's my birthday this week, so I'm getting old. And in my many years, I just think it's really good to just learn good cooking habits. And you can't escape that. So just learn them and then be a bit flexible as well, and you're laughing.
Well, Nick, happy birthday for this week.
Oh, thank you very much.
2-1, is it?
That's right. That's right. So let's have a big 21st celebration. Hey, by the way, can I just say, we missed Tuesday, didn't we?
No. Tuesday is in 2 weeks' time, Nick, where the countdown is well on its way.
I must have gone the second, but that was 0-2.
That's right. Yeah, that's not the real Tuesday. So if you're unaware, the countdown has begun for Tuesday, which is the 22nd of February 2022. The date will be 2-2-2-2-2.
Yeah.
And it's a Tuesday. So it's going to be an exciting day. And that's only like 2 or 3 weeks away. So.
Yeah, thank goodness. Because I, of course, got it wrong. I did 0-2. And then I thought, why isn't Steve making a big deal about it? And then that's why.
No, geez, Nick. You're
I know. I was tired. I think
you're living too far ahead.
Was it week one of the challenge or the prep week or something like that? I was looking for something to cling to.
All right, Nick, next question here. How much time should I leave after a main meal if I can't train first up in the morning? There are times I may go after dinner, but is there a recommended gap between meal and training? Okay. So the question is, how long should you wait after you eat to go and train? Okay. The first thing I'd say is that there's probably no right or wrong here. Some individuals would be fine to go and train straight after a meal. So for me, I have a routine where I would have a meal, and then I'd start getting ready for the gym, and then I walk to my garage and then, start my warm up. So for me, once I put my spoon down, finish eating, and then, pack up what I'm eating and then go get ready for the gym and then go to the gym. Okay. It might be maybe, 20 to 30 minutes before I'm actually lifting heavy. So that's me. Other individuals, just the thought of that, they might be like, oh geez, nah, my stomach would not have a good time, with that. So you may require longer periods of time, mainly for that gastric distress, that stomach like churning effect. I do think it depends on what type of activity you're doing. So if you're about to go for a run, do a HIIT session, do some cardio, okay, maybe you want to wait a little bit longer or not have a really heavy meal around that. But if you're going to go to strength train, okay, probably not an issue. Now, from an actual nutrition physiology sense, I do think it also then depends on like what foods you're actually eating. Because if you're going to have, let's say, some fruits, some easy to digest carbohydrate source, okay, you could eat that. Physiologically, your body digests it quite quickly, enters the bloodstream, enters your muscle tissue, and it's ready to go. You could be feeling those effects within 30 minutes. Okay. But if you were to have a really heavy meal, like a high protein, high fat meal, physiologically, your body might take longer to digest those things, and it might take longer for you to feel the effects of the energy that they may bring. So you may need to wait, up to an hour or more for the more quote optimal effects of those foods to enter your systems so that you can feel the effects while you're training. Okay. The only thing I would say around that, advice about how long you should wait after you eat to go and train is, that old wives tale of things that like my mom used to say to me when I was doing swimming lessons, right? Where you should wait 30 minutes after you eat before you go back in the pool. So think about it that way. So as a general sense, if you are going to eat and then go train, try to think of that window of like 30 minutes before you start lifting anything heavy or doing some heavy activity, just to allow some digestion to occur, because we don't want you to be like vomiting in the gym or at home or wherever you are. And then allowing for some time for your body to break down some of those compounds, those food compounds, to enter your bloodstream so they can do what the food's job is meant to do, give you that energy, give you that nutrients, give you that fuel to give it a good old training session.
I'll tell you a story just really quickly. When I used to teach spin, I used to just basically eat and then jump on the bike. And there was one time when I had tuna and I was like, oh, perhaps that's pushing it. So the tuna can and the spin class wasn't so great, but other than that, I'm a bit like you. I can basically almost eat at the gym and then get on with it.
Well, look at you putting a new sense into tuning your bike, huh?
Oh, yeah. We did tune. Yes. Yeah. Tuna, it's just no good. No good can come of it.
No good can come from tuna. Okay, Nick, next question here is basically, I'm having trouble getting into the workouts and form a habit because it is uncomfortable and poor resistance exercises and not having decent equipment and not having the structure of going somewhere to do it, which I think helps me enormously. So they're talking about home training. So this individual sounds like they're having some challenges in, you know, getting into that routine of training at home. You know, maybe they don't have a lot of equipment at home, so some of the exercises are difficult to complete. And then they maybe don't have an area that they can train at home. And, you know, maybe them going to the gym was, you know, like a big ceremony of events to, you know, get them pumped up to train. So Nick, what advice would you give to this individual about training at home?
Okay, so we always say this, but I'll just say it again, just try and make your environment as exciting and productive as possible to come into the gym. So, you know, say, I know a lot of our, if we look at our Facebook group, we have a lot of home gyms now that people have actually invested in even big posters for their gyms, you know, just to make it into a space where it's quite motivating for them. So it's whatever motivates them. So that's quite good. So set your environment up as best you can. You may not have a full room, so it may just be a corner, but you could really do that up. You know, make sure that you've got, say, your gym towel or a mat or other things like that, just as, you know, a space that you can claim. So if I was studying, if I was doing anything, I'd do the same. I'd set my books up, I'd set my computer up, I'd make sure that my desk was clean. So the environment's very important. Now, at this point, I will say that it is possible to invest in one of those dumbbell sets, the adjustable dumbbells online. I do think that now gym equipment is more readily available. And also, I think that there's been a lot of manufacturers that have sort of started doing these things over this time. So there's probably some good deals that you can get. Then you've got a lot more to play around with, because a set of dumbbells and you're laughing. I know that I did a lot of shoulder work with an 8 kilo and a 10 kilo set of dumbbells over lockdown, and they, you know, they went quite well. So yeah, the prices have gone down again now that gyms are open again. So you could probably, I'd go that. I think it's worth it for your peace of mind as well, because then it's sort of a little bit more motivating for you. Then yeah, so you can do the things such as slow the tempo down, pause reps, pulses, all sorts of things like that. So we've said, yeah, the creating a space, and also see if you can have some good music going on as well. I know that you use music, Coach Steve, in your gym, and I will use music when I'm training as well. Find a few YouTube workouts to follow until you get into the groove. So there are actually things that you can follow along with that are pretty much free now. I think a lot of people have exercise videos, a lot of people go live with that sort of stuff. So it's okay to follow along with somebody until you get motivated to do it on your own. On our Facebook group, if you join it, there's a whole back catalog, the best of Coach Nick's live workouts. So if you just look up workout of the week or my name, you'll find a whole bunch of those. So they're also something that you could do. They're very tailored to home training. Just say you can't fathom all of that yet and you're just getting used to it, set up your environment one thing at a time, but just make sure that you get your steps in and make sure that your food is on track, because that's something that you can control. So that's not part of not liking the home training. That's just something else that you need to do anyway to, you know, get healthy and get on track. So you may as well take care of that side of it.
I like it. Good advice. Nick, when you're training, what music do you listen to?
Like 90s stuff. You know, like, Blink-182. I do like Motley Crue. I like Nirvana. I'm a bit, because I'm a 90s kind of a person. So anything like that I really like. And then I'll even listen to some 80s. You know, like I like All Fired Up. So, that kind of stuff. Like I think anything from about 2000 has lost me a little bit for gym training. Mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah, I listen to 2000s and beyond, Nick.
Yeah, so we're completely different.
No, so like I'm often on Spotify and I'll just grab one of the like Spotify playlists and play them. So I'm usually choosing either like a punk rock like playlist, you know, or like a heavy metal type playlist. This is often what I'm going to. I think I like anything with like a bit of a beat, you know, a bit of a guitar riff in it. That's always fun. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I will kind of, they're often like my hype up music. And then sometimes I'll tune it back and play like some like old school R&B, right? You know, just to like get yourself in the groove, because you got to like kind of like float a little bit in the gym, right? You got to be smooth and suave in the gym and focus on what you're doing. But then lately, I'm getting into a little bit of EDM with like some like high energy music. So old school. So but not no, I say old school because like it's maybe like 10 years old, right? But probably not old school.
Not real old school.
To some people listening to this, but like some electric dance music. You know, some old school like Timmy Trumpet gets you in the groove. You know, like and ready to lift. So
no, that was my old spin stuff. So yeah, I do like that too. But yeah, often it's stuff that I might not listen to in any other time. But yeah, I also like the Hilltop Hoods. They're quite good. They're pretty good. So
they get you in the
I'm getting fired up now.
I'm thinking about it.
I can do a set on my bench press here. Because I am in my shed at the moment, for various reasons.
Yes, and if you were looking at the video of this podcast, you'll see Nick is sitting in front of, you know, like 120 kilos of weight on a bench. So I reckon she's going to lay down and bust out some reps.
Yeah, just as my warm up, you know.
All right, Nick, last question here. And I think this question, I feel personally victimized with this question, Nick, based off our podcast last week about bread. And this question is, what's everyone's thoughts on eating bread? And they write, I know it's challenge approved and it's on the plan, but curious of thoughts. I love bread and don't think I could completely cut it out, but do people cut it out to get better results? Okay, all right, let's talk about bread.
Let's go there.
Last week, I was using an analogy of putting bread in the freezer, because bread, similar to this person asking this question for me, is, you know, one of the things that I enjoy. I love having a good old sandwich, especially a peanut butter sandwich. Lately, a hummus sandwich, but we don't talk about that.
We're going there, are we?
We're going there. But look, let's talk about bread, and then in a broader sense about this idea of maybe like demonizing certain foods. So the first thing I'll say is that there's no such thing as a bad food. Okay. Of course, there are foods that are, you know, closer to plastic than food, right? They're not really food anymore. But there are no such thing as bad foods. And, you know, if you look at some of the best athletes in the world, I think you will be surprised about what foods they're putting in their mouth or how they're utilizing different foods to get that result in their body. So an example is, you know, some Olympians, they will have lots of lollies and candies before their event because, you know, high sugar, really low in fiber, easy to digest, straight into their bloodstream, bang, they're off to the 100 meter sprints. So those individuals will benefit from those types of foods. So, you know, talking about bread, sure, some individuals, you know, can't have bread. You know, maybe there is some gluten sensitivity, some celiac going on, or maybe, you know, they don't digest it well. So there's probably a big portion of people who know that. And then there's a big portion of people who don't know that they can't digest bread well. So sure, some individuals, if you take out bread, you may find that, you know, your bloating goes away. You may find that, you know, you're able to lean out a little bit more. Sure. So for some individuals, you might get better results by removing bread. And the same thing could be said about removing almost any other food. So anything from, you know, animal products to certain fruits and vegetables for my FODMAPs crew out there. So we don't know which foods, unless you systematically approached it, unless you're having lots of consistency in your diet, like Nick's spoken about before, you won't know what foods have what effect on your body. Okay. So sure, maybe for some individuals, reducing your bread intake could really lead to better results. Sure. But similar to what we said in this podcast already, as long as we're having within our calorie intake, it doesn't really matter for body composition what foods we're choosing to have. Sure. You know, if you're buying Coleworth's cheapest bread that is made from like a low quality flour and industrially made, okay, they may not have as many vitamins, minerals, fiber as, you know, maybe like a high quality bread of high quality fiber, of high quality flour, you know, made in a really well way. You know, we can start to weigh up the nutritional differences between those types of things. So for some people, yeah, if you are having lots of low quality bread, you're probably better having high quality bread or replacing that with high quality foods like, you know, straight up vegetables or straight up fruits. Okay. But at the end of it, no, it's, you can eat bread, you can eat carbs. And it doesn't matter if you're having your energy or carbs from bread or from vegetables or from pasta, or insert any other food, as long as we're within that calorie constraint model, we're matching our calories towards our goal, we're being consistent with that, we can see some positive changes in our body composition changes.
That's right. But yeah, the only thing with bread that I'd add is the danger of it is only that it's very easy to overconsume. So, because it's so yummy.
Especially so, like fresh bread.
Okay. Oh, 100%. Like if we walk, Shane and I like to walk to a local bakery on a Sunday. That's our thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a very far distance. So I make him walk up and down the hills and things, but we get sourdough and we come home and it's either a baguette or it's sliced. And I would eat the whole thing. I just would. And so it would be awesome.
Yeah.
Then I might not have a lot left for the day if I wanted to stick to my calories. So, and that's been done before. I've done that. But yeah, it just depends, you know, what you're after. But yeah, bread is not the devil.
No. And, you know, talking about the idea of like easy to overconsume, like I think like super plain, like white bread, you know, there's a little bit of like blandness to it, but as soon as you mix like a really plain bread with, which is like really carbohydrate based with a source of fat. So I'm talking like butter, I'm talking cream, I'm talking olive oil. You know, when we start mixing those two, carbs and fats, that is just a recipe for overconsumption because it's super, super tasty. And my mouth is salivating talking about this.
I know. Right? And do you know that that's basically your entree when you go to any Italian restaurant or home, you have that as just your starter. You have bread with olive oil. So my dad will, if we've got any bread and he's coming over to eat, he will go and get the olive oil out and put it down, and that's like part of his meal, just like a lot of olive oil all over the bread. So yeah, that's just the entree. It's just the beginning. So
like foods where there's a mixture of carb and fat are super appetizing and, you know, really easy to overconsume. And, you know, think about some of the foods that people will often report as some of their favorite foods. Let's say like pizza. Pizza is like bread with cheese on the top of it, you know, carbohydrate and fat. Things like cupcakes is, you know, like flour and butter. So carb and fat together. So, you know, think about some of the foods, you know, let's say like a spaghetti bolognese with Parmesan cheese on the top, you know, pasta and fat together. So think about, you know, some of the foods that might be your kryptonite or some of the foods that, you know, that you overindulge in. They're often a mix of carb and fat together. So it's never really carbs' fault. Like carbs are just there for the ride. You know, carbs aren't bad, and it's the mix between carb and fat, which is really, you know, appetizing, and they're the foods that we can easily overconsume. And you sit there in a food coma and you're like, oh gosh, what have I done? And you've had 2000 calories worth of sourdough and you're like, what's happened to me?
That's the thing. Like if someone said to you, yeah, have a bowl of pasta, but you can't have anything on it, you can only have the plain spaghetti with nothing else, you probably wouldn't consume as much as you would when it's loaded with all the other stuff.
That's right. All right, Nick, look, let's wrap up there for episode number 51. Nick, we're on the other side of 50s. We're on the glorious side as we make our way towards the 100th episode in just 49 weeks' time, Nick.
I know. It's lucky that our podcast wears sunscreen and we look good.
We look good. And we weights train. So we're young forever.
Exactly right.
The fountain of youth is in this podcast. Mm-hmm. If you like this episode, check out the 50 other episodes of the Challenge Weekly Show. You can find us on anywhere where you find your podcast. So Spotify, iTunes. If you are on iTunes, leave us a nice review. You can share this podcast with a friend. Help us spread the good word. And we'll catch you next week for episode number 52.
Thank you very much.